Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, January 12, 2015. South Sudanese civil society groups disagree on whether elections should be held this year.
The South Sudan Civil Society Alliance called upon the National Election Commission to hold elections on time in order to avoid South Sudan falling into a leadership vacuum.
And Sudan's main opposition party says the ruling party is confusing the Sudanese people.
The ruling party has just been trying to distract the attention of Sudanese people by making them busy talking about the dialogue that never took place up till now.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Civil society activists disagree over whether or not South Sudan should move ahead with general elections, which the government has scheduled for late June, despite more than 1 year of deadly conflict. While some activists want the elections postponed until peace is restored, others say the vote should be held this year in order to give the government legitimacy. Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
South Sudan's transitional constitution states that elections must be free and fair, that a census must be conducted before elections, and that the term of the president shall be 4 years, commencing from July 9, 2011. It also states that when the presidential term expires, the presidency will be considered vacant and the vice president would temporarily assume the post pending the filling of this position within 14 days. The South Sudanese Network for Democracy and Elections, an umbrella group of more than 75 non-partisan civil society organizations, says there is not enough time for the South Sudan Elections Commission to hold free and fair elections. Ijo Elias Odego, executive director of the network, says the commission cannot possibly do all the work necessary to hold the presidential, parliamentary and state governors' elections in 6 months' time.
Sunde urges the National Legislative Assembly to use these remaining 6 months of the transition period productively by working hand-in-hand with the civil society organizations, political parties and the National Constitutional Review Commission to amend the transition constitution 2011 to extend the mandate of the sitting government.
Odego says the parliament should amend Article 66 and Article 100 of the transitional constitution, stating that the national legislature and a presidency must end on July 9th if new elections are not held. Odego says parliament should amend the constitution so the electoral process can move forward in logistical fashion and so rebels and the government can negotiate a peaceful settlement to the ongoing conflict. The chair of the National Elections Commission set June 30th for the date of elections, and the government has approved spending 1.5 billion South Sudanese pounds or $517 million for the vote. The civil society coalition says the government, rebels and citizens should focus more on supporting the peace process rather than holding elections. The South Sudan Civil Society Alliance does not agree. Late last week, that coalition said it recognizes the need of the National Elections Commission to execute the electoral process. David Dow is the spokesperson of the alliance.
The South Sudan Civil Society Alliance called upon the National Election Commission to hold elections on time in order to avoid South Sudan falling into a leadership vacuum. The legitimacy of the government can only come through elections means and in a democratic manner.
But at the same time, Dow said,
the civil society acknowledges the conditions under which South Sudan is facing, and all these conditions cannot allow us to hold a constitutional requirement for a periodical elections.
The South Sudanese Network for Democracy and Elections says elections should be delayed on the grounds that there are not enough resources to conduct a census, and elections would not be free and fair due to ongoing fighting. Odego says amending the constitution for these reasons is not unheard of. He cites Kenya as one example.
The Kenyan constitution provided that elections are supposed to be held way back in August 2012. But as they were developing that constitution, and also unfortunately because there are a lot of issues on the ground, they wanted first to put those issues right, even the issue of putting down an independent judiciary and also putting down a very good security that will monitor the election. They said it's important for the parliament to sit down and extend the period of the election. And their period was extended up to March 2013. And this was because they wanted some of those issues has to be ironed first.
The government insists elections will be held this year and on time. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudo from Juba.
And in the neighboring Sudan, the largest opposition party, the National Umma Party, says it will not take part in the April 13th presidential election. Mariam Sadiq al-Mahdi, the daughter of the leader of the party, tells VOA's James Batty that any election held this year would not be free and fair because the ruling National Congress Party of President Omar al-Bashir has been in power for 26 years and controls everything in the country.
We are not taking part in this election. We are actually resisting this election because it has got nothing to do with election. It's just mere waste of time and resources.
Well, it can be said that President Bashir has taken steps to want to bring about national dialogue. Isn't that a credit for him?
No, he has been calling for this national dialogue for the last 12 months, and it turned out to be just a waste of time because this dialogue did not start up till this moment. And instead, they said the election is a better way of dialoguing between the politicians and the people. So now the dialogue didn't take place, and now they are saying the election is the dialogue, which manifested what we have been saying, that the ruling party has just been trying to distract the attention of Sudanese people by making them busy talking about the dialogue that never took place up till now.
If you do not take part in the election, you are giving President Bashir the go-ahead to continue to rule the country. Why not go and test the waters and see if you can win the election?
Dear James, what is taking place has got nothing to do with elections. There is no such thing of freedom of expression, no freedom of movement, no freedom of organization. Actually, they have changed the constitution by themselves. They have devastated totally all the pillars of a modern state. There is no rule of law. So in such a case, there is already total failure in governance. There is a serious problem of conflict in Sudan. There is a serious economic crisis. So if the renomination of President al-Bashir would solve that, let them go ahead and solve it. What we need in Sudan is not appointing a man who is already under fear and deceived by the indictment of the International Criminal Court. What we need is reconciliation in Sudan to make genuine and just peace that takes place, and through that we can go into interim period after we start transforming the economy.
So what does your party want? What does the president have to do for your party to take part?
We call for a dialogue to settle, because our problem is not only in whom to rule Sudan, but how Sudan to be ruled. For that, we are suggesting a comprehensive constitutional conference to discuss this matter and to have an interim period which is national, which has the same distance from all the political parties. This national interim government in a period of between 2 to 3 years to establish peace in Sudan and to start the economic reform and to implement the basic freedoms and to prepare for fair and free elections to settle the way of governance in Sudan.
That's Mariam Sadiq al-Mahdi speaking with VOA's James Batty from Khartoum earlier today. Mr. Bashir launched his re-election bid yesterday. Back to South Sudan, where Central Equatorial State has a new cabinet. Late last month, Governor Clement Wani Konga reshuffled his entire cabinet, reappointing 11 ministers and bringing in 3 new faces. Central Equatorial State Parliament approved the appointees last week and were sworn in last week. During the swearing-in ceremony, Governor Konga urged his cabinet to improve service delivery for residents and work to unify the people. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu has the story from Juba.
The cabinet consists of 14 ministers, a health advisor, and a deputy governor. In a statement released shortly after the swearing-in, Konga explained he reshuffled the cabinet mainly for security reasons.
Comrades, some of you who have come in to add to the old cabinet, this is going to be a harsh time. First, in regards to security of the nation, this requires that there must be unity among the people of the Republic of South Sudan, so as to enable the government seek a peaceful end to the current war that occurred on the 15th of December 2013 without cause. Secondly, to enable the government to defend the nation and, if necessary, to prosecute the war so as to bring an end to the current rebellion.
Konga reshuffled his cabinet about a year after he appointed it. He asked the ministers to submit their work plans to the State Secretariat and urged the ministers to work hard to provide services for Central Equatoria state citizens. Perhaps most importantly, Konga urged his cabinet to work for peace.
Equatoria should remain neutral so as to be able to bring peace. Yes, there are problems caused by cattle owners, which has made our people not to be happy. By taking up arms, you know a solution to that.
Manasi Lomole, who was reappointed deputy governor, said he would work towards that end.
I want to pledge here in front of you and in front of my people that I will remain committed to serve the people of Central Equatorial State and indeed the people of the Republic of South Sudan. I will continue and I pledge to work together with your leadership and the leadership of the Republic of South Sudan for the good of all our people. And I will also stand and work with the leadership of the ruling party.
Minister Hastin Yokwe, previously the State Minister of Education, but now appointed as the Minister of Cabinet Affairs, said it is important to work as a team.
And we shall try to make sure that we work collectively with strong coordination among ourselves, cooperation, and support one another so that we don't betray the promise that we made to the people and the mandate that was given us by the people.
The three new ministers in Konga's cabinet is Juma David Augustine, the former commissioner of Yei County, but now appointed as the Minister of Finance and Economic Planning; Benjamin Gore Gimba, former manager of a State Investment Corporation, but now appointed as the Minister of Commerce, Industry, Mining and Investment; and Stephen Lado Onesimo, formerly the chairperson of the State Insurance Regulatory Authority, but now appointed as the Minister of Culture, Antiquities, Youth and Sports. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Udo from Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a rebel commander denies his fighters carried out a massacre in Unity State. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do people in your family give birth at a clinic or at home?
We do give birth at the clinic because we feel it's safer. Yeah, it's more safer because we see that giving birth at home is always dangerous. And the person who is helping you give birth may not be so safe.
In our family, our people give birth in the clinic. But it is different with others because others understand the importance of the clinic. And there are some others who do not understand the importance of the clinic.
In those days, they give at the home, but today, nowadays, they give at the clinic. Because of the modernization, everything has changed now. That is it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A top South Sudanese rebel commander is criticizing a recent United Nations human rights report that says opposition forces were responsible for massacre in the Unity State capital, Bentiu. It says more than 300 civilians were killed in April of last year, and the 33-page report released by the United Nations Mission in South Sudan Human Rights Section also outlines ethnically targeted attacks reportedly carried out by government forces. Major General Kong Chol strongly denies rebel forces killed hundreds of civilians seeking refuge in Bentiu Mosque and accused UNMISS of being biased against the rebels. General Chol, who was the commander of the SPLA's 4th Division before the outbreak of the violence in mid-December 2013, says those killed in Bentiu were actually Sudanese rebels fighting alongside government forces.
What happened in Bentiu in April, I think We were not fighting any civilian. We were fighting the government forces, including the GMs and the SPLM North. They were fighting alongside the government. So what they have reported, it is government propaganda. The UN and the human rights agents are biased.
General Chol accused the UN of relying on hearsay, saying UNMISS failed to conduct in-depth investigation on the ground.
We fought with the GEM and the government forces. We killed those who were in uniform. And some of them, they even removing their uniform and hiding themselves.
General Chol says a state of emergency was declared by President Salva Kiir in Unity State in January 2014. All foreigners working in Bentiu were subsequently evacuated. The rebels accused UN of failing to report unlawful killings carried out by government troops when they regained control of the state. Chol says government forces fighting alongside Sudanese rebels burned houses in Guit, Kuich and Mayandit and Leir counties.
And where do these their food come from? They are just in any quantity. Those who killed, they burned the villages, they went up to land, they destroyed all the facilities that we have, and they destroyed Kuich County, Guit County, all of them.
Chol says the rebel faction was prepared to accept impartial investigation into claims made by UN and human rights groups, but says that did not happen. The UNMISS report also documents the killing of dozens of civilians by armed mob who attacked a protection of civilian site outside Jonglei State capital of Bor 2 days after the Bentiu massacre. Bonifacio Taban in Kampala contributed to this report. Many shops in Bor are closed today as traders are complaining about an increase in annual license fees. Business owners say the increase are steep and the new fee are too high. However, as Jacob Achek reports for VOA from the Jonglei State Capital, municipal officials insist the traders must pay.
Local official in Bor imposed the new fee last week. Wholesale license jumped from 2,000 South Sudanese pound to 3,150 pound, or nearly $1,000. The cost of the retail license went to 1,150 pound, up from 700. Municipal council and the police last week began closing shop, whose owners have not renewed their license and dozens of shop remain closed. Guy's Ioannis recently opened a soft drink wholesale business that was shut down. He is not sure he can continue.
For the wholesalers, 3,150. For the retailers, 1,050 pounds. Of course, this money is too much for the traders, and everybody is complaining about that. For me, the option is to pay it, but with complaint. My message, this war traders, they have been lost everything before, starting from zero. So for the people who are starting from zero, I think they were supposed to give us some time in order to recover the damage that we have get in the crisis time.
Traders Union official in Bor said not only are the few fee highs, but it was wrong for the government to increase the fee without consulting traders. Fabio Kual is the executive director of Bor Trade Union.
For us, we are still waiting to tell us the detail. Where is increased the license in this year, 2015? Because you don't know actually. So we read a letter from the office through them, and then they'll give out the time. Then we sit with them.
But Bor acting mayor, Deng Akwe, said license need to be renewed every year. They insist traders renew their license at the newly set fee or they will not be allowed to operate. He said those who cannot afford the annual fee can make monthly payment.
They have to come for the renewal of the licenses because it's what mostly is the work of the trading. Because when you have not have a license, then you may have difficulty with the administration of the town later. And it is always a burden on you if you are to pay every month. So it is better to pay once a year, then you stay for the 12 months without being charged again.
According to local official, more than 60% of the traders in Bor are foreigners. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Bor.
The European Union is ramping up efforts to address child malnutrition in Sudan, which health workers say it is at emergency levels. The UN Children Agency, UNICEF, says multiple conflicts in Sudan have made the situation worse and has resulted in sustained humanitarian crisis. VOA fellow Nabil Biagio reports health workers say the problem of child malnutrition in Sudan is complicated.
Geert Kapelier is the top UNICEF representative in Sudan. His office just received €1,335,000, or a little over $1,570,000, to fight child malnutrition in Sudan, which he calls rampant.
Sudan is one of the worst affected countries when it comes to chronic malnutrition, with more than one out of three children in Sudan chronically malnourished. Countrywide, no single state in Sudan is spared from high levels of acute malnutrition. We estimate that today over 2 million children are acutely malnourished, of which 550,000 cases per year of severely acute malnourishment.
Kapelier says hundreds of thousands of children in Sudan are malnourished because they don't have access to nutritious food. He says conflict and displacement contribute to the problem, but they are not the primary reasons for child malnutrition.
It is poverty, but it is more complicated. It is also ignorance. I think it is also related to certain traditions. Ignorance around what exactly consists nutritious food. It is not just helping to ensure that the children have eaten enough. It is also help mothers and fathers to understand that it is critical for children to have a diversified diet, to eat as much vegetables as it is for eating rice, the staple food.
He says malnutrition is also exacerbated by a lack of access to clean drinking water and good sanitation and hygiene practices, which can lead to diarrhea. Kapelier says the money coming from the European Union or EU will take care of the most critical needs.
Ensuring first and foremost that we help those most severely acute malnourished children to survive. So we ensure that we have in place the therapeutic interventions that help those children who are suffering from the most severest malnutrition, that they can be assisted and that we prevent the children dying.
Last year, UNICEF received €2 million, or a little over $2,358,000, from the EU, which Kapelier says helped reach 150,000 malnourished children last year. He says while they are very appreciative of the new funds, there is still a shortage in resources in order to meet the needs of the massive number of malnourished children across Sudan. Kapelier says malnutrition leads to other health problems.
You see families coming to the health centers with children, not because they are malnourished, but because the children have a high fever or the children have a constant diarrhea or are very sick. It is only in the health center that then we have to identify that, in fact, the major problem the child is facing is not the fever or the diarrhea. It is the problem of malnutrition.
Kapelier says they are trying to intervene at the community level by going door to door to identify children who are malnourished. And he says the government is working with UNICEF to tackle the enormous problem of child malnutrition. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. France is deploying 10,000 troops to boost security at sensitive sites following last week's deadly terror attacks in Paris. Defense Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian told reporters today the troops will be in place by tomorrow evening. Speaking after a cabinet meeting, France's interior minister said about half of the troops will be protecting the country's 717 Jewish schools. Also today, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry announced that he will travel to France on Thursday and Friday for talks on countering extremist violence. Lebanese police have raided a notorious prison as part of an operation targeting inmates that officials say were connected to a deadly bombing on Saturday in Tripoli. Helicopters hovered above the overcrowded prison east of Beirut early today, while inside, police transferred a group of inmates to another section of the facility. Several prisoners burned their mattresses in protest. And finally, the European Parliament is preparing to issue a warning to Turkey about press freedom in a rebuke condemning the arrests and detention of dozens of journalists who have been critical of the country's president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, and his ruling Justice and Development Party. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
A United Nations mediated Libya peace talks aimed at reaching a political solution to end fighting in the country ridden by conflict are expected to get underway this week at United Nations headquarters in Geneva. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA mediators are urging the warring factions to seize this opportunity to restore stability.
Allahu Akbar! Allahu Akbar!
Armed militias celebrate the capture of Libya's Tripoli International Airport in August. It highlights the ferocity of the fighting among rival factions, which has engulfed the country since the overthrow of Muammar Gaddafi's government in 2011. The unity among the warring factions, which succeeded in ousting the country's long-serving dictator, quickly evaporated after his death. Now, two opposing governments and two parliaments, each backed by rival, heavily armed militias, are competing for power. UN spokeswoman Yvette Morris tells VOA the United Nations is hoping to break this deadly logjam.
The UN's special envoy, the Secretary General's envoy for Libya, who is also the head of the United Nations support mission in Libya, Bernardino Leon, hopes that the talks could help to lead to the formation of a unity government that enjoys wide support and pave the way for a stable environment in which a new permanent constitution can be adopted. He's also hoping that the talks will put in place security arrangements that will help to bring an end to the armed hostilities raging in different parts of Libya.
But no date has been set for the talks to begin, although they are expected to get underway later in the week. A round of talks scheduled for December 9th was repeatedly postponed because of intensified fighting between the internationally recognized government and Islamist militias. But the UN support mission in Libya, which is hosting these talks, believes this time the warring factions will stick to their word and meet. UN envoy Leon is calling for the parties to freeze their military operations during talks. He says this will help efforts to restore stability and prevent a further slide toward deeper conflict and economic collapse. He warns the parties not to let this opportunity slip by, as it may be their last best chance for achieving peace. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that report by Lisa Schlein in Geneva brings us to the end of our show for this Monday. We now leave you with a song talking about religious tolerance. The title is Muslim Wamasi by David Didi.
Migeni sawa nina kuluwe ya la damu wa sawa nita muslim wana masihi meishu sawa nina kuluwe ya la damu wa hawa mami muslim wadadi masihi uman sawa uman kuluwe ya la damu wa hawa brada muslim wa sister masihi Uman sawa, sawa, uman kulu ya la damu wa hawa Wa eva, ya muslim, amshi la jamehe Unadi beisi, Muhammad Rasulallah Aku ya muslim, amshi la jamehe Unadi beisi, Muhammad Rasulallah Amshi jamehe arka wa salli وأكرمي سورة الفاتحة وصلي بسبحان الله
We have been listening to David Diddy with the song Muslim Wa Masih. I am John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could join us. Tune in again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Yeah, Messi, I'm shaking his head.